Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast, and we have a special episode today. JD, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well, enjoying this. You know, we got some rainy weather going on, which is not a big deal. It makes me feel very moist and wistful, but I know I'm super stoked. We got a great guest on today, and this is going to be an awesome episode.
Yeah, so we have Adam Contrast on the show today. He is the creator, director, producer of a documentary called The Fastest DeLorean in the World, which is now streaming on Amazon Prime. He's also an entrepreneur who owns RentTheDeLorean.com, where you can do just that. You can rent the DeLorean. Adam, welcome to the show, man.
Happy to be here. Good name for a podcast.
I appreciate that. And yeah, we're looking forward to getting into your documentary and just kind of talking with you about Back to the Future and the DeLorean. Tell our audience just a little bit about yourself and, you know, kind of what you're up to these days.
Man, I don't know where to start on that one. I know what I'm up to these days, which is editing the sequel to the documentary that you guys saw.
Very cool.
Because it ends with quite a cliffhanger. So we're trying to put up the sequel, which will just kind of round out the whole story. And otherwise, at present moment, I'm pretty much just renting the hell out of that DeLorean. I don't know what happened, but in the past 2 years, it has spiked. My goodness, more than we've ever done. We're doing like 10 events every month right now, and it's just nonstop. And I don't. It's the car that will never die.
I mean, it's really like having a celebrity at your house.
It is, and what's also I think funny about that is that it's like having a celebrity, but it's not about you. It's about, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like everybody's taking pictures constantly. I hang out with Mr. Full of Love a lot, the Mayor Goldie Wilson, the mayor. And it's the same kind of thing. Everybody's excited to see him because of what he did back in the day, but it's not really him that they're excited to see. You know, it's like, oh, you're the mayor. And then, you know, and then it moves on. Same thing with the car. People taking pictures constantly, almost running me over. It's really intense. But yeah, it is like having being a celebrity or being encased in a celebrity every time you drive it.
That's great. So obviously, we're called the Back in Time podcast. We have a lot of love for the movies and the franchise. Man, how did you first get introduced to Back to the Future? Was that something you saw in theaters or was it a VHS rental?
Oh, I'm that old. I saw it in the theater. Visitation with my dad. We'd always go see a movie. I remember my dad saying Steven Spielberg, and we went and saw it. I was 9, summer of 85. No, it's not hyperbole to say that it was my favorite movie. I remember when it came out on VHS. I remember when it came out on DVD. I remember when, you know, I mean, like, I've always been a huge, huge, huge fan. But ironically, I never had any props from the movie. I wasn't that guy, you know? I didn't have, like, the little toys and all that kind of stuff. The DeLorean time machine was actually the first prop I ever owned from the movie.
Yeah, those guys that have the toys, it's really quite weird.
What a bunch of losers.
Yeah, I know. It's totally not cool.
No, I was just never a collecting kind of guy.
I mean,
you know, that's just the way. I mean, now everybody thinks I want more of those kind of things, and they we get them for me. But and I appreciate it, you know.
For sure. So, as a 9-year-old, can you describe what that felt like walking out of the theater, seeing it for the first time? Do you remember any of those emotions?
Yeah, my biggest emotion the very first time I saw the movie was, oh my God, how cool be to hang out with my parents when they were my age. That was, you know, I had a really good relationship with my parents and I liked them both. And I think it was the first time that it really hit me. Oh man, my parents were my age at one point and they were just like me. And wouldn't it be awesome to like, and I would think about the 50s, you know, because when my parents were basically the same ages, and I just, I thought that was super awesome. That was my biggest takeaway, besides thinking Michael J. Fox was cool as hell and that kind of stuff. But just the idea of hanging out with your parents, guys, same age, loved it. Thought it was awesome.
JD, would you want to hang out with your parents when you were in high school?
No, absolutely not. I don't think either of my parents finished high school, so it would be a matter of I would be going to class and they wouldn't be. So.
Yeah. So, Adam, a little context. JD's had some parent issues, so that's kind of like a running gag on the podcast.
Oh, you didn't want to have sex with your mom?
Definitely. Wait, did you? Is that how you liked her?
No. Okay. Although if Leah Thompson was my mom, I don't know, man.
She much so different.
That movie.
Much different. Yeah, none of our moms look like Leah Thompson.
None of our moms are Leah Thompson.
I don't know. Kyle's mom in her youth, maybe.
No. Nope, definitely not.
What's different was your mom? I mean, my mom was actually quite stunning when she was 18.
Yeah.
But
there you go. Shout out to the moms.
Got awkward. Got a little awkward pretty quick.
That's all right. That's what we do here. It's totally what we do. Made us wistful. Now, for our audience that has not seen the movie yet, how did you actually come to make this film?
Did you guys see Back in Time, the documentary?
I have, yes.
Okay. Because I'm in that, kind of telling the whole story about the mini golf course that's in my backyard, as well as...
which is super cool, by the way.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. As far as making the engine swap to make it the fastest floor in the world, that came about because my brother works on performance engines and makes race cars. And he came over for the first time, came out to California, and I was having car trouble anyway with the transmission. And he said, you know what? For this amount of money, we can probably make it really awesome, and you don't have to worry about all these issues with these old parts. We can replace them, and you'll have a more reliable car, and it'll also be really fast. And that starts off a journey that I keep telling people that ended up being a great movie. I just kind of wish I wasn't in it.
Yeah, I love the part that I believe the original idea for it was only going to be a couple thousand dollars. You immediately go, okay, I'm going to double it.
Yeah.
And then he came back and said, okay, I think it's going to be like 8,000. So in your head, you go, okay, 16. And then Don says, well, what'd you spend? You're like, it's 25 grand and counting.
Yeah, we're past 30 now.
It got
away. You don't want to ruin anything for people who haven't seen the movie yet.
Yes.
It's funny. Even if I tell you what happens, once you get into it, you're kind of following it. You don't really remember. But he got in a little over his head, and then it got absolutely bizarre. Like, it's funny because I do a lot of screenings with the movie, and man, when I get to the part where the texts come in of the dino read, it hits me like a 2x4. I'd completely forgotten by that point in the movie. And then it's like, oh my God, I can't believe he did that. Oh my God, I can't believe he just disappeared. Oh my God. So it got really dramatic really quickly and really good for everybody watching. Yay. But it's still something that's a problem for our family. And it's been rough, but good movie.
So maybe a little teaser into the next one here, the follow-up, which you said would be released sometime in June?
Yep, sometime in June, probably the very, very end.
Does that storyline continue with you and your brother?
Well, yeah, I got a lot of questions to answer, and that's basically, it ends with a huge cliffhanger as to the fate of the car, and then, of course, am I even speaking to him anymore, or what happened, what was the reception? So there's a lot of good storyline to go through, and I just have to warn people that it's probably not going to be the Hollywood ending everybody wants.
Okay.
Because it takes a couple people to do that, but it's still very riveting. I mean, it's a lot of good story. I mean, it's a lot of good, like, getting handed a whole bunch of bad cards and then making it work. And, when you get to low points in your life, like your car completely on fire and not running, and then you have to rebuild it yourself, it's inspirational kind of stuff. I just, I didn't expect to be in that position, and it's still kind of a running issue, because once you swap an engine in a car, everything's good now.
Yeah.
For the rest of the life of that car, you're dealing with gremlins, at least so far, a couple years in. So
it's a constant work in progress, or at some point you're running on borrowed time with this car.
Well, but I'm not a mechanic. I mean, I think that's the problem. If I was a mechanic, maybe I would have that. I'm crafty. But when you do an engine swap like this, you kind of need to know what you're doing well past being crafty, because you need to know why. Right now I'm having a starting issue, but the battery's fine. Is it an ignition issue? Is it a fuel line issue? I just have to Google and start taking shit apart. That's a problem. So it's scary, and it's something I make my money with. So, my God. Yeah, so whenever anything goes wrong, it's just kind of this helpless feeling of, uh-oh. And it's not like you can take it to a mechanic, because I've tried to, man. Like, I've talked to some mechanics, and they said it's a what? And it has a what in it? oh, and it's a really valuable prop that we, if we break anything, we're liable for. I'm like, so no, you got to do it yourself. And as much as I've learned, I still don't feel comfortable with it. Even completely rebuilding it, it's still not something I'm comfortable with.
So I have a quick question for you in terms of how you're doing this documentary, and you've got the new one coming up. Is it like a straight traditional documentary, and how you're creating it and building it and filming it? I mean, do you guys have an outline, or is it more like a reality TV show? When shit happens, this is where it's going.
Well, shit, reality TV shows are a hell of a lot more scripted than we think.
Oh, that's true.
Right, right. Yes. I mean, for the very first one, my idea was, since I think I mentioned to you, I'm the first and longest running video blogger, which is a very strange claim to fame, but I have been randomly recording and documenting my life since I moved out to California, which is coming up on 20 years ago, January.
Wow.
So that's all online, and I, you know, to the point of being sick of myself. But so once you're the first and longest running, like, I'm going to stop, you know? When the thing came up with Fastest DeLorean, I was so excited because I was going to be able to document my brother. You know, somebody else, it was going to be 100% him building it, him putting it together, him racing it, him getting the record. Like, that was the whole point to it. And then, as you know, if you've seen it, it all starts to just fall apart. And then I have no choice because I've already put tons of money into this. I got to finish the story. And then I end up having to deal with things and doing it myself. And yes, then it becomes a freaking story about me. So the first one is certainly a lesson in your, you know, best laid plans. When it comes to documenting stuff, you can't really control a lot of it. The second one, however, I just tried to record as much as I could while all the drama was going down, and then hope that there was some sort of storyline. And I think the way it has been crafted, it's been from feedback from other people, because everybody asks you the same questions after they see it. You know what I mean? I get inundated with emails like, oh my God, are you talking to your brother? Oh my God, what happened to this? Oh, you know? And so, yeah, I obviously it's pretty clear. And then the other really cool thing is that what happened, since my brother was not really part of the rebuild, I ended up becoming even better friends with Don, Mayor Goldie Wilson.
Right.
And he and I end up going on these ridiculous adventures together. I mean, we got flown out to France to show it, the movie, and going out again this year, sequel. And he and I have found all these weird adventures where we surprise people with the time machine and like make people's day. And so we're actually working on a reality show with just him and me called The Mayor and Me, where we talk about all the cool adventures we get to go on, because I have a time machine and he's freaking Mayor Goldie Wilson. And he looks exactly the freaking same as he did. Dude, it's one of the creepiest things in the world, man. It's like he signed a contract with the devil, because that man is 61 years old, and it's unbelievable. He even cut his hair now, so he just looks like he's Goldie Wilson. I don't know how he does it, man. I look older than him, and I was 9 when the movie came out.
So, Adam, I've got a follow-up question to that, just because, you know, Kyle and I, we both have experience in filmmaking, and I'm actually in the market for a new camera for a side project that I'm working on. What did you film this on?
My iPhone.
Really?
I'll be perfectly honest. I did the majority of it so guerrilla. Like, for example, the drag racing. Oh shit, man. I got as many friends as I could, and I just handed them phones. You know, and the reason I handed them iPhones was because it has a floating light, and like, you can get really nice stable footage. It was much more just trying to capture the essence of everything. I now have a little bit better, like, I have an XC10. I don't know if you know about these little things. But again, the reason I got this XC10 as opposed to a better Canon was because image stabilization is really good, and it's got autofocus. It's like the only like DSLR that has autofocus. And when you're handing cameras to a bunch of people that don't know how to handle a camera, you know, it sounds silly, and I can't always have really good cameramen on call when I'm doing some of this stuff, because there's no budget. We're like scraping everything together. So having accessible cameras that anybody can pick up if I need help really quick was the number one goal of this movie. And obviously at the beginning with Kenny, I couldn't be in Ohio and shoot it professionally. So he had his cell phone at the time, and he would just upload footage, and, you know, it worked out pretty good. I think you'd be surprised, with good editing can cover up a lot of issues with your camera, especially in a documentary that isn't, you know, obviously it's pretty clear that it was on the go kind of stuff, you know. Yeah. Like we had a GoPro and like little stuff like that. It's not like documentary, you can get away with a lot less camera shit than other mediums, for sure. Not my ideal by any means.
No. It's totally understandable. So I did have a question about the drag racing. Now, originally you hire a driver for the first run. After that, you take over.
Yes.
Now, being somebody that I, maybe the fastest I've ever gone as a car is like maybe 85. Like, I'm not out there trying to get any tickets here. I'm a pretty safe driver. Yeah, very lame. Totally what is it like when you get to that speed, man? Especially in a DeLorean that has like, you know, it's got stuff on the back of the hood where the engine is. Like, yeah.
That and the actual. The axles and the frame, and it was meant to do that.
Yeah, it's what an X-frame.
I think I've mentioned in the movie is that, you know, if the car's supposed to go that fast, it's fun. You know, it's that you can actually, it's kind of, you know, have you ever been in a Tesla? Like, Teslas are amazing. It feels like a rocket going off. That's kind of fun, but it was designed to do that. Right. The DeLorean was never designed to do that. The first thing that goes through your head when you're doing the first drag race, and you remember when I take my helmet off and I look like I've seen God. I mean, it was the worst thing I've ever been through. The problem is I've floored it before on the highway, right? Sometimes you have to floor it to get around something or so forth. You do that for 1 or 2 seconds top.
Right.
Well, when you're drag racing, that foot, it never moves. So your body tells you about 3 seconds in, stop doing this right now. But you do it for 12, 13, 14 seconds. And it at no point do you feel safe. It's not even the top speed. It's that it keeps going. I mean, I think the top speed by the end of a quarter mile was only like 110. I mean, that's really fast. But it was more the fact that you're not stopping and you're going and you're going and you're going. And then after you do it the first time, I just wanted to get it done. I just wanted to get it done so I could go home to my kids and I could end the movie. So every single time I do that and I don't get the record, it's the most frustrating thing ever because I just want to end this. I don't want to do this. I make my money off this car. I felt kind of painted into a corner, like I had to do it to save the movie. It was just it's so stressful. I'm never going to do it again as long as I just never.
Yeah, until there's a huge outcry for part 3 and you're like,
I've already said if there's a part 3, the only way we'll do a part 3 is if somebody else breaks the record.
Yeah.
And they're willing to have us actually race on the same track next to each other.
Okay.
And then I'll hire Ray, who's about 85 pounds soaking wet, and he can do it and he can get all the glory. And then I would like to see that. That would be cool to see two DeLoreans going at it side by side. I would dig that, but I'm personally never doing that shit again. Like, never gonna happen. I didn't want to do it then. I didn't want to do it at all. So
now, obviously, this is a car that you're renting out. You're probably not driving this for like leisure.
Never.
At this point. Okay.
It's never been driven for leisure, other than when I very first got it, and like my kids wanted a ride in it, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like, No, the second, it's funny, when I first got it, there'd be more leisure, mm-hmm. and then the business picked up. Once the business picks up, you start doing the math.
Right.
And you go, oh, shit. Like, how many starts do I have left before it decides not to start? I have an event today. It is our 412th event, and we've never missed a gig. But the amount of stress that goes into whether or not when you turn that key, it's going to start. And how early you have to test it. And I mean, it's just, it's nonstop. So I don't waste any starts without there being a specific payment at the end of it. Because as I said, it's just not worth it. It's not fun to drive. It's not like, woo, I'm in a time machine. That has gone away, man. Now it's like, this is my food truck. And I need people to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
So the DeLorean is obviously probably your favorite film car, hands down. I'm guessing is there any competition? Is there a second place? Is there another car that you'd be like, I want to drive that, or that you'd get into?
I mean, from a business perspective, the Ecto-1 certainly gets some recognition, and the Knight Rider car, Those are the two that I hear of. And I know some people that have them and they rent them and so forth. Maybe the Jurassic Park Jeep has a little bit of panache. But,
yes, that's what I was going to say. That's yeah. one of mine.
Yeah, no, there are certainly people that, but it becomes so much more niche. I mean, now you're going down to, you know, and actually the Batmobile, the Keaton Batmobile, you can't even rent that because the Warner Brothers owns that. Because that was their car. They made up the whole car. Universal can't own the DeLorean because they made it out of an already, you know, established car. You know, it's like you can't kill somebody for renting a Ford. You can't sue somebody for renting a Ford.
Exactly.
Yeah. So those are the three that are certainly out there. But as far as I am concerned, I don't have the room to have more than one. I'm pushing it as it is. I mean, I live in Los Angeles. Space is pretty tight. And I mean, I don't know if you can see on the website that it's in. It looks like it's on the mini golf course in a little showcase.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's because it's the only place I could put it. Like, there's just no room. So yeah, everybody asks, "Oh, do you want to get another one?" Or like, no, I don't. I end up getting most of the leads for the DeLorean, and then I just find the closest car and book for them. So.
Yeah.
In fact, as we were sitting here, I just got a call about an event in Pennsylvania, and I'm trying to help that out, make that work. So,
very cool. Yeah, I'm hoping to get the maybe ride in one because we had talked about going to the Out of Time Foundation in July, which
where's that going to be?
Which Goldie's going to be there? It's in Bourbon Street near Chicago, and it's with the Mr. Fusion band.
Mr. Fusion. Yes, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Here's the funny thing. We are in Paris until, he leaves the 17th of July, and he's not going to get back to L.A. till the 18th, and then he's got to turn right around and fly out to Chicago. And I just, that's tough. But yes, he will be out there. He is, as advertised, one of the most genuine people I've ever met in my life. I think that comes across in the movie. That's what I love about the movie is people don't really know him well, but in that movie you can kind of see he's just a laid back dude with no ego. And it's just awesome. It's an awesome energy to be around.
Yeah. And the one thing this might have just been a entry into your vlog that I watched on YouTube, but you had told a story about how you guys had a charity event and Claudia Wells was there and he was there and they were doing mini golf and she left when the cameras went off and he was like, "Get me a beer. I'm going for another round." And you're like, "I love this dude."
Well, it was more, not only the beer and the other round, it was more that once the cameras left, he didn't leave.
Right.
When you're in his realm, and I know everybody thinks, oh, B-list celebrity or whatever, but man, when he goes to these events, dude, he's the biggest thing. I mean, all of them, anybody from Back to the Future, they're like the golden touch. And at some point, you get tired of constantly being in front of the camera. It's like being a trained, you know, little toy. And you're just clapping and you're like, you know, so I expected Claudia to leave when the cameras left. I understood. The news came out. They got their piece. I didn't begrudge her for that. But you could see the little glimmer in his eye because he was a golfer and he got his ass kicked the first time. You could see him go, "Oh, no, no, no." And to his credit, he came back so much. I mean, we became friends and then he came back, but he actually won. He actually came back until he won the following year on Memorial Day, 2015. He did it. He beat everybody who had been coming for years and got the championship. So I like that. I like that competitive streak. You know, it's a guy thing. That weird, "Oh, I'm going to do this. I cannot get beat by all these guys at this silly little mini golf course."
Yeah, we can definitely both relate to that being former college athletes. So that's why I love that part when he said, like, you're like the competitive spirit came out. And I was like, I like this guy.
Yeah, and he didn't have any of the, he didn't need to be in a special corner. I mean, I feel like I'm going to just slam some celebrity by trying to explain these stories, but you run into celebrities that have requirements that are just outrageous. Yeah. And they clearly want to make sure you know that they're not one of you. And you respect them and it's cool, but because of this mini golf course that I put in my backyard, Norm from Cheers came out. Like Jim O'Hare from Parks and Rec, Mo Collins, like all these awesome people came out and had no problem sitting in a backyard deck and talking and having a beer. And I appreciate that beyond all I can even say. if you're cool with coming to somebody's backyard in the valley, that's awesome. That's pretty rare. It really is.
Is that the next business right there? The back.
It's not a business, man.
No.
No. We have charity events there. That's what's cool. I'm done with business. I'm good with business. Like I want more free time to do, you know, the stuff that I like to do. Like I didn't think renting a car would be something I would be doing at this point in my life. But mm-hmm. you know, you meet a lot of interesting people. You get to do a lot of cool things. But I mean, I think you can tell from the documentary. I like doing documentaries. I like telling stories. I like talking. So that's kind of the way I want to go. But so I got to build, man.
That's the next venture, is more documentaries. Do you have topics in mind that you want to touch on or explore?
I'm trying to take everything as it comes, and I'm trying to do what I think would be the most unique. Obviously, the part two comes out this year. Next year is the 20th anniversary of the longest running video blog, and there's about a billion stories in there. And as much as I don't want to put the focus on me, I have never tried to monetize the journey, which is the video blog. And all these younger video bloggers have come up, and suddenly they're peeking at me going, hey, you're like the grandfather of all this. How come you don't have more subscribers? And I'm like, it's because that wasn't a thing when I started. There was no YouTube. It was 99, for Christ's sake. It does, in the back of my head, I kind of think I should probably at least put a statement down and go, boom, here's the first 20 years of a really interesting project, and then move on, you know, from there. But after that, I don't know. I take it as it comes. If it strikes you at the second, a guy had screwed up with his girlfriend for her birthday party, or for her birthday present. And so he hired me to come up in the DeLorean time machine, and I upsold him Goldie. And Goldie jumps out at her work of the time machine and gives her a gift from him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, this is a reality show. I want to tell these stories because it's so weird that two friends have the ability to blow people's minds. Like, it's so fun to do. You know, like I love how much you can, you know, spread joy through this silly car and through that silly character, and people like pee themselves. They're so happy. That's addictive. It's very addictive to be able to make someone that happy. You know what I mean? It's wonderful.
How now, if you could get into the DeLorean, go back to 9-year-old Adam that's coming out of the movie and go, just so you know, in 2019, you're going to be renting a DeLorean and upselling Goldie Wilson as a perk package.
I think even more than that, if you told the 14-year-old who watched Back to the Future 2 about what would be happening on October 21st, 2015, that was when it really all just kind of hit me, because I had 8 events that day. It was the craziest day of my life.
That's insane.
What I'd be doing on future day, October 21st, I think that's when it really hit me how bizarre it is that I'm driving a time machine, going to all these crazy events, and having one of them. I mean, I made more money on that day than I had in certain years of my life. Like, that's how crazy things got. So, yay, that's good. You know, I just save it because I'm not a big spender, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I still drive my 99 Camry. But, you know, I got kids, you know, you want to make sure there's a nest egg, that kind of stuff. So I'm just kind of saving everything.
How happy are you that they scratched the idea of the 1980s lead-lined refrigerator and you don't have to lug that around?
It didn't work well for Indiana Jones, so I think we wouldn't be talking right now if they went that way. I don't know, man. Everything about Back to the Future is magic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really is. I have to watch it a billion times because of all the screenings we go to and so forth. And mm-hmm. I am stunned that no matter how many times I've seen it, I'll get caught in a scene and then I start watching and 10 minutes pass, 15 minutes pass. And it is one of those very rare. It's a perfect movie. I mean, the casting's perfect. There isn't one. The pacing's perfect, which is really odd because a lot of 80s movies are so slow, and it, you know, you watch it 20, 30, 40 years later, and you're like, okay, I watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles the other day, and I was like, this is awful. Like, my brain was like, I remembered scenes that I loved, and those scenes were still funny, but there was like 13 minutes in between where fuck all happens, and you're like, oh god, the pacing was so different in the 80s. But Back to the Future is just hit, 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 and the casting is perfect. And I don't know if any of those actors have ever had better moments, you know. And as much as I want to give Don shit,
yeah,
because I'm sick of how famous he is for doing 1 week's worth of work, he totally nails the earnestness of a young black kid in the 1950s gonna be mayor. Like, you can feel his, you know, and the epiphany of when Marty McFly says mayor and he goes, mayor. Like,
yeah,
you, that was, he totally nailed that. And I it's just, you gotta hand it to the whole cast and crew and the writers, and it was just absolutely a perfect movie. Still is. I just can't believe how good it is.
Yeah, that's such a cool way of putting it too, because there's a big distinction between a good movie, your favorite movie, and a perfect movie.
Right.
It's not the same thing. You can enjoy a movie and it can be shit. You can, you know, your favorite movie doesn't have to be good. And then a movie that's just technically sound. For me, it's The Burbs. The Burbs is that perfect movie.
Right. Well, it's like I say, I personally kind of like Back to the Future Part 2 better. Because as a writer, the idea of going back into the first movie from a different angle blew my mind as a kid. Like, that just, crazy. I was like, oh my God, what, how did they do this? What a great idea. That newness has stayed with me, but obviously Back to the Future is a better movie. Like, it was a perfect little cocoon, but experimentally what they did in part two, I just cannot believe how good and how smart that was. You know what I mean? To do that from the different angle and then try not to run into your former selves before he's got to go back. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's never been done since. What a great idea.
Well, and it's true too. And the problem with sequels is you either rehash what you've already done and then people leave the theater thinking, oh, right, I already saw that. Or you do something completely off the walls different and then people leave the theater and they say, well, that was nothing like the original.
Right. Yeah.
So no, I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, part three to me was a complete rehash. Like, I thought three was just boring. I mean, it was part one in the Wild West. That's it. There was no, I mean, it felt like an opportunity lost, but you got a time machine, dude. Like, why are we still here? By that point, I was just so ready to go with all that part two gave me in my head. I thought, oh, part three's crazy. And obviously, as I think you guys know, part two and three were supposed to be one movie.
Right.
And yeah, and they just kind of split it. So I understand. I mean, it's still a good movie, but part two is just so creative. I love it to death.
Part of why we had you on is we're celebrating 100 episodes. We did Back to the Future 1 for 50. We're doing part 2 for 100.
Oh,
part,
yeah,
3 will be 150. So you mentioned seeing part 2 in theaters. Like, what was that memory just coming out of the theaters after seeing the sequel?
I remember 1989. I got out of school and my dad picked me up and I got to go straight from school. We went the day it came out. I remember that when the VHS came out of Back to the Future, which was maybe 87, 88, I don't, but okay, it said to be continued.
Exactly.
And, yep, you know, they changed it. And I specifically remember it did not say it to be continued in the movie. So I got super excited. And then I was always one of those kids that was dreaming about the future, the Jetsons, that whole thing. So the idea that they were going to this far off future was just, I've never been more excited for a movie ever. All I remember after that was, you know, at the end they had the little teaser for part three and being a little bummed.
Okay. I
remember being kind of bummed. I was kind of like, ooh. First of all, really, I got to wait till the summer. I got to wait like 6 months now.
Oh,
it was November 89 and then the other one came out in 90 and they're like, oh, come on. And I was like, man, I hope they leave the Wild West at some point because I don't really want to see a whole movie in the Wild West. That was my initial thing. But I thought, I thought two was fantastic. I could not understand how they went back into the original. Ooh, and another thing, the moving camera, the camera they built to do the split screen.
Yes.
Was just unbelievable. And in fact, I got a chance to do, I did a bunch of characters for CBS called Adam and the Egos. Mm-hmm. And I used the same techniques that they did to do that. I got the Price is Right set. I got to do all my characters on the Price is Right set. I set up all these cameras and then was able to pan in afterwards. And I didn't want to use any green screens because it looks bad. So Back to the Future 2 specifically inspired. The split screens of Back to the Future 2 are almost as better than some of the stuff that comes out now that uses green screen. It's incredible how good that looks. It's a lot harder to do than green screen. Revolutionary stuff.
I love it. You know, one of our guests that we're going to have on this week as well is going to be Jeffrey Weissman.
Yes,
and I know he's going to come on and talk about that. What did you? I mean, that's such a hard role for him to step in to Crispin Glover's role, and obviously he's not on screen as much in the second one. But what did you think of his performance?
It's difficult because he was being used to screw over Crispin Glover. I mean, he was, and in fact, he actually helped Crispin Glover sue.
Oh wow!
Universal, and he won. Because they totally used Crispin's nose, and yeah. they cut in actually Crispin Glover, and they put Jeffrey blurry in the background, so you weren't exactly sure. Like nobody really caught that, and you know it's tough because he got used. Like that's what that was for, and. Difficult situation to be in, but also very frustrating that the producers decided to do that as opposed to, you know, dealing with Crispin. And when it comes to that whole ordeal, I kind of side with Glover a little bit. I think they kind of badmouthed him and he wasn't really demanding as much money as Michael J. Fox. It's funny. There's a bunch of great interviews where Crispin really just lays it out there. I think they really had a problem with him and how he felt about the first movie. And they just were put off by it. He's kind of a bizarre cat. You know, he didn't like the commercialism of the end of Back to the Future 1.
Right.
He didn't like that, you know, hey, now they have more money, so it's a happy ending. Like, he had some interesting takes on it and was very vocal about that. And I don't think they appreciated that.
Thank you enough for coming on the show and plug your website, Rent the DeLorean. What does somebody get if they want to actually come out and ride in this DeLorean?
Yeah, actually, if you're anywhere in the country, just go to rentthedelorean.com. Got some packages on there. My phone number is literally right there. Like, that's my phone number. That comes right to me. So I get texts and calls all day, all night. Wonderful. But there are probably 12 to 15 really good time machines all over the country that we, you know, my job at Rent the DeLorean is basically to find the closest car to you and try to pull off your hopes and dreams as cheap as humanly possible. That's really what it comes down to. But more than that, go watch Fast. Because I actually make about 9 cents if you watch Fastest DeLorean on Amazon Prime. Those 9 pennies come right to me. Yeah, I don't make a lot of money. It's not a money-making venture, but it's a very good story. And part two comes out end of June.
Well, I'll try and watch it 6 more times so you can get a cup of coffee or something.
Woo! Where can you get a cup of coffee for 37 cents? What?
Gas station coffee is a $1.09, man. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, cream's a $1.05. So, right. And so Fastest DeLorean. Fastest DeLorean Part 2 and End of June. Very excited.
Okay. Great. And then is there going to be a DVD Blu-ray that'll have like more special features than...
Yes. We were going to release a Blu-ray for part one. And then I said, man, that seems mean to do that to somebody. I'm probably going to release a Blu-ray of it kind of like a 10-part series.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Because truthfully, it could have easily been a reality show. It was very hard at the time. I'm like, how do I release this? Do I make it a documentary? I didn't know what to do. It's not like you can just go to Netflix and go, hey, I have this 10-part doc. That's just not how that works. So I had really no choice other than to, you know, get a distributor for the documentary. And then once that was out, go from there with the rest of the stuff. Yeah, there will be a set that you can get that will tell the whole story as opposed to just screwing you over.
Okay.
and stopping at a fire and saying later, so that way you have it all in one package.
Man, hey, plug your social media, Facebook page, YouTube, let our audience know.
My name, Adam Contras, Kontras. I don't do social media as well as I should.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody probably says that, but Rent the DeLorean has a Twitter account and a Facebook page, and Fastest DeLorean has a Twitter account and a Facebook page. But I have an open Facebook page for my name, and I kind of cover the whole gamut on that.
That's how I found you. Pretty easy.
Yeah, no, that's just been the easiest way to handle it. I'm just too busy, man. Like, things are so nuts. I can't you know, keeping the journey going. If you go to theofficialjourney.com, I don't know how I've done it this long. I mean, you're talking 100 videos and entries a year for 20 straight years. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to keep that going. But shit, when you get recognized as the first and longest run, it's like Cal Ripken, right?
Yep.
You're like, how do you
got to keep putting them out there till the wheels fall off?
Until the wheels fall off, man.
I love it. Well, yeah, guys, check out Adam on Facebook. Follow him. Stay tuned for the latest sequel here for The Fastest DeLorean on Amazon Prime. And again, Adam, thanks for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it.
Congrats to you guys on 100.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we just wrapped up the interview with Adam Contrast. Again, thanks, Adam, for coming on the show. JD, what do you think of our interview with Adam?
It's a fantastic. I thank you so much, Adam, for joining us. Audience, if you have not checked out his documentary, his website, his socials, give him a look. He is a fantastic human being with a great sort of thing that he's doing. And, you know, in the meantime, you know, tweet at us. What's your favorite Hollywood car? Mine's obviously the Smokey and the Bandit's car. Kyle's obviously a butt plug.
Yeah. No, it's the DeLorean. Although I don't fit in the DeLorean, so it wouldn't be a fun car for me to drive. I'm way too big for that car.
And the butt plug doesn't fit in you, so.
I'd probably, if I have to go with one I can actually get in and drive, I think I'm going to go Ecto-1. Put me a gun in the head. That's where I think I would go.
Okay.
Although the Jurassic Park Jeep would be very cool.
That's my second place.
Yeah. By the way, and I wanted to bring this up on the episode, how cool would it be if during one of the Comic Cons you could go for a ride in the Jurassic Park Jeep with Goldblum?
Oh, I would. Seat? I would pay a massive amount of Blumpkin for that.
That's like 5 meatballs.
Oh yeah.
I'd a good amount of money into that one. But yeah, no, I think it's a really cool thing that he does. Yeah, I like that he kind of interacts with other DeLoreans all over the country. He's not just out for himself in California. He's not trying to make trips all over the world with this car. Just trying to get it to start one more time. We're just looking to get you guys to download the episode every single week. So we are up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to us on there. Justin is blogging every single week at backintimepod.com, so check out the blog. And then, more stuff coming down the pipeline. This is a huge week for the show. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for supporting us. 100 episodes, unbelievable. But I will leave you with to follow us on Twitter. Drop us a comment. What is your favorite Hollywood prop car? We want to know. Tweet at us, backintimepod. I'm at KAutry29. JD is at UnjustJustin. And we are out of time. Time to get back into the DeLorean. Punch in today's date and return back to present day. See ya.
Rolling, rolling, rolling. Right? Like from the music video.